Part 4, Perspectives of Health, Weight, and Mind. I want to enjoy a healthy body.
Bringing your physical body into alignment is a tremendously valuable thing to do for two reasons. First, there's no subject that people think about more than their own body, and that's logical since you take it with you everywhere you go. Second, since every perspective or thought that you have flows through your lens of your physical body, your attitude on virtually every subject is influenced by the way you feel about your physical body. Because science and medicine have been slow to acknowledge the connection between mind and body, between thoughts and outcomes, between attitudes and results, most people are reeling in a plethora of contradictory guidance relative to their bodies. Whenever the basis of an understanding is flawed, no amount of patching it with methods or potions or remedies can bring consistently provable results. And because the alignment of energies for each individual varies because of such a variety of factors in belief, desires, expectations, and early and current influences, it's little wonder that remedies that work every time are non-existent, and it's no wonder that most are truly confused about their physical bodies. When you attempt to gather and process information about what's happening with other people's bodies, instead of using your own emotional guidance system to understand your current alignment or misalignment of energy, it's tantamount to using a roadmap from a different country to plan your route in your own country. That information simply has no bearing on you and where you are right now. You've been given so much information that is contradictory to that which we know to be and to the laws of the universe that we're extremely happy to talk to you about you and your body relative to the greater picture. We want to assist you in finding a clear understanding of how to be a healthy being who is physically fit, who looks as you want to look, whole in terms of mind and spirit and body. When you use your mind to deliberately focus your thoughts to align with the thoughts of your inner being or spirit, your physical body will be the manifestational evidence of that alignment.
I want to balance my desires and experiences.
It is not possible to bring your physical body to a state of perfect health by only thinking about the physical aspects of your being and then offering action regarding your physical body. Without an understanding of the connection between the physical you and the non-physical vibrational inner you, there can be no consistent understanding or control. In other words, while it may feel to you that the path to a good-feeling, good-looking body will be a result of your behavior in terms of food intake and activity, it is really much more about your vibrational alignment between the physical and non-physical aspects of your being. Once you accept the totality of your being and you make that vibrational alignment your top priority, you are well on your way to achieving and maintaining your desired physical body. But if you use conditions of others, experiences of others, and opinions of others as your gauge for wellness, you'll not be able to control the condition of your own physical body. In other words, as you strive for a physical standard based on comparison with the experiences of others, rather than striving for your own personal alignment between you and you, you will never discover the key to control over your own body.
I needn't compare my body to others.
We would like to assist you in understanding that there is not one state of being that is the correct one, or even the most wanted one, for there are a great many varieties of states of physical bodies that have been intended by you as you emerged into this physical body. If it had been your intent to all be the same, more of you would be the same, but you are not. You come forth with all sorts of varieties of size and shape and flexibility and dexterity. Some are stronger and others are more agile. You come with great variety, adding all sorts of differences that are of tremendous advantage to the whole. You came forth in your great variety to add balance to this time and place. And so we would like to encourage you, rather than looking at yourselves and acknowledging that you are lacking in this or that characteristic, as most of you do, we would like to assist you in looking toward the advantages of that which you are. In other words, as you are assessing or analyzing your physical body, spend a greater part of your time looking for the advantages that it offers, not just to you, but to the balance of all that is.
Abraham, I recall that when I used to work out on a trapeze when I was with the circus, I was too heavy to be what they called a flyer, but I was too light to be what they called a catcher. So the trapeze wasn't my place to be comfortable unless we either got a heavier catcher or a lighter flyer, so to speak. So I was still an aerialist, but I performed what was called an aerial bar act, where no one had to catch me and I didn't have to catch anyone else. But I didn't see myself as lacking because I didn't think that I should have been bigger or smaller. I just found something that I liked to do that still gave me the same general feeling of performing as an aerialist.
Good. That's excellent.
What if I saw myself as perfect? So, couldn't we look at our weight then and our state of mental ability or talent in the same way? Could each of us not see ourselves as perfect?
We're not necessarily encouraging you to look at whatever your current state is and proclaim it as perfect, because you will always be striving for something that's just beyond what is. But finding aspects of your current experience that feel good when you focus upon them will cause you to align with the perspective of your inner being, who is always focused upon your well-being. We encourage you to feel for the agreement between your thoughts about your body and your inner being's thoughts about your body, rather than trying to get the conditions of your body to agree with the conditions of other bodies that you see around you.
Pushing against unwanted attracts more of unwanted.
As you are understanding that you are creating through your thoughts rather than through your action, you will accomplish many more of your desires with far less effort. And in the absence of struggle, you will have much more fun. You're offering thought in every waking moment, and so achieving a propensity to positive, good-feeling thoughts will serve you extremely well. You were born into a society that began warning you against unwanted things as soon as you arrived, and over time, most of you have taken on a guarded stance. You have a war against drugs and a war against AIDS and a war against cancer. Most of you really believe that the way you get to what you do want is to defeat what you do not want. And so you give so much of your attention toward pushing away from you what you do not want. Where if you could see law of attraction as we see it, if you could accept yourselves as the attractors by virtue of the thoughts that you are holding, you would understand what a backwards approach most of you are taking. As you say, I'm sick, and I want not to be sick, so I'll beat this illness, I'll take this action, and I'll defeat this illness, you are, from your position of guardedness and defensiveness and negative emotion, holding on to that illness.
My attention to lack attracts more lack.
Every subject is really two subjects. There is the subject of what you are wanting, and there is the subject of its lack. Regarding your body, since every thought that you think is filtered through your perspective of this body, if this body does not feel the way you want it to feel, it is a very natural thing that a large number of your thoughts, a very imbalanced proportion of your thoughts, would be slanted toward the lack side of the equation rather than toward the truly desired side of the equation. From your place of lack, you will attract only more of that, and that is the reason most diets do not work. You're aware of your fat, you are aware of the body looking the way you do not want it to look, and so when it gets bad enough that you can't stand it anymore, either from your perspective or because others are scowling at you, then you say, I can't bear this negative place anymore. I'm going on a diet and I'm going to get rid of all of this stuff that I do not want. And yet your attention is given to the stuff that you do not want, and so you hold it to you. The way to get where you want to be is to give your full attention toward what you do want and to not give your attention to what you do not want.
Planting fear seeds does grow more fear. Abraham, a dear friend of mine, actually who was my mentor in business, volunteered to be a part of a medical study. He said that even though he was in brilliant health, he was willing to participate in it if he could be of value to others. Because so many men that were his age at that time in that area were dying from this, whatever this disease was. Well, it seemed like only a matter of weeks before we received a message from him that he had been diagnosed with the illness. And now he's no longer in physical form. But he didn't seem to have a fear of the disease. Did he create it in his body by merely focusing on it?
It was his attention to it. In other words, it was his intent to be a value for others. And so he allowed them to probe and poke and look. And in the probing and poking and looking, he received enough stimulation of thought from the others to make him aware of the possibility. Not only the possibility, but the probability. They planted within him the seed of probability. And then, with the probing and poking and looking, his body responded to what then became the balance of his thought. It's a wonderful example that you've offered, because that disease was not within him until the attention to the disease was within him. But once the attention to the disease was within him, then his body responded in kind. The potential for wellness or illness is always within you. The thoughts you choose determine which you experience and to what degree you experience it.
Must attention to illness attract illness? Well, how much can we actually toy with these thoughts of illness? For instance, a person can watch on television and offer to come down for free examination of some part of his or her body. And if the person says, oh, well, I think I'll just go do that. I feel fine, but why not, since it's free? What are the chances of that leading to what you're talking about, a stimulation of thought and eventually an unwanted result?
Nearly 100%. Because of the attention to illness in your society, your diseases are running rampant. With all of your medical technology, all of the tools, all of the discoveries, there are more people who are critically ill today than ever before. The prevalence of so much severe illness is predominantly because of your attention to illness. You say, how much can we toy with it? And we say, you're very particular about what you eat and about what you wear, about what you drive, and yet you're not particular about what you think. We would encourage you to be particular about what you think. Keep your thoughts on the side of the subject that is in harmony with your wanting. Think about wellness, not about lack of it. Think about being as you want to be rather than lack of it. Your illnesses are not born and perpetuated only because of your negative attention to illness. Remember that illness stems from your feelings of vulnerability and guardedness. Train your thoughts on all subjects, not only the subject of physical health, in the direction of what you desire. And through the improved emotional state that you accomplish, your physical well-being will then be assured.
Is my attention predominantly focused on well-being? Another dear friend of ours recently built a room under her house so that her mother-in-law, whose health had really worsened, could come and live with her. Her mother-in-law spoke almost constantly about how bad she felt, how bad her health was, how unhappy she was with life, and about this surgery and that surgery. Well, and then our friend's mother, who was 85 years old, came out to visit for the holidays. She had never been in a hospital in her life before, but within a week of staying in that house with this other lady who was continually speaking of illness, her own health plummeted dramatically. She was hospitalized and then placed in a nursing home. Could someone's health fail so dramatically as a result of only a few days of negative influence?
The potential for illness or wellness lies within you at all times. And whatever you give your attention to begins to foster within you the manifestation of the essence of that thought. Thought is very powerful. While it's not necessary, most people who have lived to be 85 years of age have already been receiving substantial negative influence about their physical body. You're constantly bombarded with thoughts of failing health, a need to buy insurance, a need to buy burial insurance, a need to get your will in order to prepare for your death, and so on. So this woman did not receive her first negative influence about her physical well-being from the other woman in that house. However, since she was already teetering there, somewhat unstable about her own longevity, the intensity of the other woman's conversation and the responses she noticed that it extracted from the people who surrounded her did tip the balance of her thoughts enough that negative symptoms became immediately apparent. And then as she turned her attention toward her own negative symptoms, in that intense environment, those symptoms increased even more rapidly. When someone comes into your experience who stimulates your thought so that your thought is predominantly upon illness rather than wellness, upon lack of well-being rather than upon well-being, where you're in a place where you're feeling vulnerable or defensive or even angry, then the cells of your body begin to respond to the balance of that thought. And yes, it is possible that in a matter of weeks, or even days, or even hours, this negative process could begin. Everything that you are living is as a result of the thoughts that you are thinking, and there's not an exception to that.
Others' physical evidence needn't be my experience.
As you see physical evidence around you, very often that physical evidence seems more real to you than a thought. You say things to us such as, Abraham, this is real. This isn't just a thought, as if what is really real and a thought are two separate things. But we want you to remember that the universe does not distinguish between your thoughts of current reality and thoughts of imagined reality. The universe and the law of attraction are simply responding to your thought, whether it is real or imagined, or whether it is current or remembered. Whatever evidence you are seeing around you is nothing more than the manifestational indicator of someone's thought. And there's no reason for what others are creating with their thoughts to cause you to feel frightened or vulnerable. There is no such thing as an unchangeable condition. There is not a physical situation, no matter what the state of negative degeneration, that cannot receive wellness. But it requires an understanding of the law of attraction, the guidance represented by emotion, and a willingness to deliberately focus upon things that make you feel good. If you could understand that your body is responding to what you're thinking, and if you could hold your thoughts where you want them to be, all of you would be well.
How can I influence all toward maintaining health? So, Abraham, what would be the very best thing that we could do to either maintain or regain our perfect health or to influence others around us toward their perfect health?
Actually, the process for regaining health and maintaining health are one and the same. Focus more upon things that feel good. The biggest difference between regaining and maintaining is that it's easier to think good-feeling thoughts when you feel good than when you feel bad. So maintaining health is easier to do than regaining health. The best way to influence others to good health is to live it. The best way to influence others to sickness is to get sick. We understand that for those who are now in a place where they do not want to be, sounds very simplistic to just find a better-feeling thought. But it is our absolute promise to you that if you would be determined to improve the way you feel by deliberately choosing thoughts that feel better, you would begin to see immediate improvement in anything that's troubling you.
I'll relax and sleep myself into well-being.
Your natural state is one of absolute well-being. You do not have to fight anymore against illness. Just relax into your wellness. Put yourself in your bed tonight, and as you're going to sleep, feel the wonderful comfort of the bed beneath you. Notice how big it is. Notice the pillow beneath your neck. Notice the fabric upon your skin. Give your attention to things that feel good. Because every moment that you can think about something that feels good, you're cutting the fuel to that illness. In every moment that you think about something that feels good, you're stopping the illness from going forward. And in every moment that you're thinking about the illness, you're adding a little more fuel to the fire, so to speak. As you're able to accomplish holding your thoughts on something that feels good for 5 seconds, then for that 5 seconds, you'll stop fueling your illness. As you accomplish it for 10 seconds, then for 10 seconds, you've stopped fueling the illness. As you think about how good you feel right now, and as you think about your natural state as being a state of wellness, you begin fueling your wellness.
Do negative emotions indicate unhealthy thoughts?
As you think thoughts of illness, the reason that you feel such negative emotion about it is because that thought is so out of harmony with your greater knowing that you're not resonating with who you really are. The negative emotion that you feel in the form of concern or anger or fear about your illness is really your indicator that you've put a very strong restriction on the flow of energy between you and who you really are. Your wellness comes forth as you allow the full flow of non-physical energy from your inner being. And so as you think, I am well, or I am becoming well, or I am whole, it's my natural state to be well, those thoughts vibrate in a place that is in harmony with that which your inner being knows to be, and you receive the full benefit of the thought energy that comes forth from your inner being. Every thought vibrates, and so focus upon thoughts that make you feel good, which will attract others and others and others and others, until your vibrational frequency will raise to the place that your inner being can fully envelop you. And then you will be in the place of well-being, and your physical apparatus will catch up very quickly. It is our absolute promise to you. You may begin to watch for dramatic physical evidence of your recovery, for it is law.
To what degree can I control my body? Well, Abraham, this subject is about perspectives of health, weight, and mind. How can I get there and stay there? Now, I see an absolutely overwhelming number of people who are concerned about the state of their weight and their physical and mental health. And because of the amount of attention to physical health failures, I understand why people are concerned. As a kid, I had the good fortune somehow of realizing that I was in control of my own body. I recall when I was about 9 years old going to the county fair carnival, where two professional fighters would take on all comers. In other words, any of the farmers around there could pay to get in the boxing ring and fight them. And if the farmers could beat these professional fighters, they'd win the money. But the farmers always got beaten to a pulp. I remember standing in this little canvas tent lit by kerosene or gas lamps, and I can recall watching the lights flickering on the sweating back of the professional fighter. And I was just absolutely entranced with the fact that his backbone was hidden between two beautiful muscles running down his back, whereas mine was more like our Arkansas State mascot, the Razorback Hog. In other words, my backbone stuck way out and had no muscles around it, while his was beautifully embedded where I couldn't even see it. I so enjoyed observing those beautiful back muscles. I really appreciated what I saw that day, and within about 8 years, the muscles on my back did look like that. And so from that experience, I realized that I could create my physical body. As a result of the extreme ill health that I'd experienced as a child, I learned somehow to be able to control my own health. I experimented with doctors a few times, but their diagnoses and treatments were mostly always wrong. And so it didn't take me long to realize that I'd be better off staying away from doctors because I couldn't find one that I could count on to be right. They were nearly always wrong when it came to helping me. So I decided I'd be better off just handling my own body. But I still find myself thinking a little bit about how my body's going to hold up and what my future condition's going to be. Will I be able to, as they say, maintain this perfect state of health, weight, and mind? I mean, I feel I'm there right now, but I'm at the point of sometimes wondering, will I be able to always stay there? And so I'd like you to address that general subject.
Well, we're appreciating the combination of the words that you've put there, because your body and your mind are forever connected. Your body is responding to your thoughts continually, in fact, to nothing else. Your body is absolutely a pure reflection of the way you think. There's nothing else that affects your body other than your own thoughts. And it's a good thing that at that early age you proved to yourself that you did have some control over your own body. When you consciously acknowledge the absolute correlation between what you're thinking and what you're getting, you can then eventually, under all conditions, control your own experience. All that is required for you to get only what you want versus getting some of what you do not want is to recognize that the control you seek, you already have, and then to deliberately think about things you want to experience. Thoughts of decline always feel bad because you do not want decline. So utilize your guidance and choose good-feeling thoughts, and you'll have no reason to worry about moving through time. Really, it's simply a matter of making the decision, I want to acknowledge that I have the only and the absolute control of my physical apparatus. I acknowledge that I am as a result of the thoughts I think. The day you were born, you possessed knowledge, not hope or desire, but deep understanding, that your basis is absolute freedom, that your quest is joy, and that the result of your life experience would be growth or expansion. That day that you were born, you knew that you are perfect and still reaching out for more perfection.
Can we consciously grow new muscle and bone? Now, I consciously, deliberately added muscle to my body in my early years because I wanted to. But can we consciously affect our bones as well?
You can in the same way. The difference is that the current belief about the muscle is there. The current belief about the bone is not.
Well, that's true. I saw a man who had developed tremendous muscles, and I wanted that. And because others were doing it, many others were doing it, I believed I could too. But I haven't seen bone changed.
The reason that more things do not change more quickly in your society today is because most people are giving their attention predominantly to what is. In order to affect change, you must look beyond what is. It slows you down tremendously if you need to see evidence of something before you believe it, because that means you have to wait for someone else to create it before you can believe it. But when you understand that the universe and the law of attraction will respond to your imagined idea as quickly as it responds to an observed idea, then you can move quickly into new creations without having to wait for someone else to accomplish it first.
So the challenge is being that pioneer, in other words, the first one out.
The leading edge does require vision and positive expectation, but it is really where the most powerful exhilaration is. To be in a state of desire and to have no doubt is the most satisfying experience possible. But to want something and not believe in your ability to achieve it does not feel good. When you think only of what you desire without constant contradictions that are filled with doubt or disbelief, the universal response to your desire comes quickly. And in time, you begin to feel the power of your deliberate thought. But that kind of pure thought takes practice, and it requires that you spend less time observing what is and more time visualizing what you'd like to experience. In order to tell the new and improved story about your physical experience, you have to spend time thinking and speaking about the experience you would like to live. The most powerful thing you can do, the thing that will give you much greater leverage than any action, is to spend time every day visualizing your life as you want it to be. We encourage that you go to a quiet and private environment for 15 minutes every day, where you can close your eyes and imagine your body, your environment, your relationships, your life in ways that please you. What has been has nothing to do with what will be, and what others experience has nothing to do with your experience. But you must find a way to separate yourself from all of that, from the past and from others, in order to be what you want to be.
What about when one's desire overrules one's belief? I know. People had been running for like running races for thousands of years, and yet no one had ever been able to cover a mile in just 4 minutes. And then a man came along named Roger Bannister, and he did it. He ran a mile in 4 minutes. And once he did it, now many others have run the 4-minute mile as well.
When people do not allow the fact that no one else has ever done something to prevent them from doing it, they are of great advantage to others. Because once they break through and create it, then others can observe, and then in time they can come to believe or expect it themselves. And for that reason, everything that you accomplish is of value to your society. Your platform for progressive living continues to expand, and life does get better and better for everyone. But we want to take you beyond the need to see it before you can believe it. We want you to understand that if you believe it, then you will see it. Anything that you practice in your mind until the idea begins to feel natural to you must come to physical fruition. The law of attraction guarantees that. You will feel enormous liberation when you realize that you do not have to wait for someone else to do something in order to prove that it can be done or before you can allow yourself to do it. As you practice new thoughts, reaching for improved emotions, and then see the evidence that the universe will provide, you'll come to know your own true power. If someone were to tell you that you are experiencing an incurable disease, you could then say with confidence, "I will decide what I will live, because I am the creator of my experience." We'd like to say to you that if your desire is strong enough, a strong desire can outweigh your negative belief, and your recovery will begin. That's like the story of the mother whose child is pinned beneath the object that weighs many, many more times than anything she's ever lifted before. But in her powerful desire to save her child, she does lift it. Under normal conditions, she could not even begin to lift this object. But with such powerful desire, her normal beliefs become temporarily irrelevant. If you said to her, "Do you believe you can lift that object?" she would say, "Of course not. I can't even pick up my suitcase when it's full." But belief had nothing to do with this. Her child was dying, and her wanting was to free her child, and so she did.
But what if I believe in dangerous germs? Well, for instance, I really do want to be healthy, but I also believe that I might catch some things. And so whenever I visit people who are in the hospital, I hold my breath as I walk down the corridor to avoid germs.
You have very short visits, yes?
Yeah, well, I do have short visits, and I keep going to a window and trying to get some air. So if I believe that I can avoid the germs by holding my breath, then will that belief keep me from getting sick?
In your strange way, you are maintaining a vibrational balance. You want health. You believe that germs could make you sick. You believe that your behavior of avoiding the germs is preventing sickness, and so you achieve a balance that works for you. You are, however, going about it the hard way. If you were really listening to your guidance system, you would not enter an environment where you believe there are germs that could compromise your well-being. The dread you feel about going into the hospital is your indicator that you're about to take action before you have achieved vibrational alignment. You could just not go to the hospital, but then you would feel uncomfortable because you know your sick friend would enjoy a visit from you. So you find a way to visit your friend without feeling dread. And that's what we mean by finding vibrational alignment before you take the action of entering the hospital. In time, you can come to believe so much in your well-being, or your desire for well-being can become so vivid, that you could be in any environment and not feel a threat to your well-being. When you're in alignment with who you really are, and you're listening to your powerful guidance system, you would never enter an environment where your well-being could be threatened. Unfortunately, many people override their guidance system for the sake of pleasing others. Two people could enter the hospital as you've described it, one feeling no threat to well-being and the other feeling great threat. The first would not get sick. The second one would, not because of the germs that are present in the hospital, but because of the person's relationship to his own sense of well-being. We're not attempting to alter your beliefs because we don't see your beliefs as inappropriate. It is our desire to make you aware of your own emotional guidance system, so that you can achieve the balance of vibration between your desires and your beliefs. Doing what you call the right thing means to do that which is in harmony with your intent and your current beliefs.
So there's nothing wrong with taking the coward's way out?
There are many who override their own guidance system by trying to please others. And there are many people who will call you selfish or cowardly when you have the audacity to please yourself rather than them. Often others will call you selfish because you're unwilling to yield to their own selfishness without even realizing the hypocrisy of their demand. Sometimes we are accused of teaching selfishness, and we admit that it's true. Because if you're not selfish enough to tend to your own vibration and hold yourself in alignment with your source, with who you really are, then you have nothing to give another anyway. When others call you selfish or cowardly, their own vibrations are clearly out of balance, and a modification of your behavior will not bring them into balance. The more you think and speak of your own physical well-being, the more entrenched your own vibrational patterns of wellness will be, and the more law of attraction will then surround you with things that enhance and support those beliefs. The more you tell your own story of well-being, the less vulnerable you will feel. And then not only will your point of attraction shift so that different situations will surround you, but you'll also feel different about the situations as they come.
I am guided toward what I do like.
The only path to the life you desire is through the path of least resistance, or the path of most allowance. Allowance of your connection to your source, to your inner being, to who you really are, to all that you desire. And that allowance is indicated to you in the form of good feeling emotions. If you will let feeling good be your most important priority, then whenever you're having a conversation that is not in harmony with the health you desire, you'll feel bad, and so you'll be alerted to your resistance. And then you can choose a better feeling thought, and then you'll be back on track. Whenever you feel negative emotion, it is your guidance system helping you realize that you are, in this moment, offering resistant thought that is hindering the stream of well-being that would otherwise be reaching you fully. It's as if your guidance system is saying, here, you're doing it again. Here, you're doing it again. Here, you're doing it again. This negative emotion means you're in the process of attracting what you don't want. Many people ignore their guidance system by tolerating negative emotion, and in doing so, they deny themselves the benefit of guidance from broader perspective. But once life has caused you to identify that you desire something, you will never again be able to look at its opposite or at the lack of it without feeling negative emotion. Once a desire has been born within you, you must look at the desire if you are to feel good. And the reason for that is you cannot revert back to less than life has caused you to become. Once you identify a desire for wellness or for a specific bodily condition, you will never again be able to focus upon the lack of it without feeling negative emotion. Whenever you feel negative emotion, just stop whatever it is you are doing or thinking and say, what is it that I do want? And then because you've turned your attention to what you do want, the negative feeling will be replaced by a positive feeling, and the negative attraction will be replaced by positive attraction, and you'll be right back on track.
First, I must be willing to please myself.
When you have been on a particular train of thought for a while, it is not easy to abruptly change the direction of your thought because law of attraction is supplying you with thoughts that match your current train of thought. Sometimes while you are in that negative feeling mode, another who is not in that negative place will not agree with your negative view of your current subject, which only serves to make you want to defend your position all the more. Trying to defend or justify your opinion only causes you to stay in your resistant state longer. And the reason so many people hold themselves in resistance unnecessarily is because it is more important to them to be right rather than to feel good. When you meet those who are determined to convince you that they are right and they try to hold you in a negative conversation in an attempt to convince you, sometimes you are considered uncaring or cold-hearted if you do not hear them and eventually agree with their point of view. But when you forfeit your good feeling that comes when you choose thoughts that harmonize with your broader perspective to try to please a negative friend who wants to use you as a sounding board, you're paying a very big price for something that will not help your friend either. That uncomfortable knot in your stomach is your inner being saying, this behavior, this conversation, isn't in harmony with what you want. You must be willing to please yourself first, or you will often be swept up by the negativity that surrounds you.
Is there an appropriate time to die? Abraham, are there any limits of control for our bodily conditions as we approach 100 years of age?
Only the limitations caused by your own limited thinking, and all are self-imposed.
Is there a time to die? And if so, when is it?
There is never an ending to the consciousness of you, so there really is no death. But there will come an end to the time that your consciousness will flow through this particular physical body that you identify as you. It's really up to you when you withdraw your focus from this body. If you've learned to focus upon good-feeling subjects and continue to find things in this environment that excite you and interest you, there is no limit to the amount of time that you can remain focused in your physical body. But when you focus negatively and chronically diminish your connection to the stream of source energy, your physical experience is then shortened because your physical apparatus cannot sustain long-term without source energy replenishment. And your negative emotion is a signal that you're cutting off the source energy replenishment. Get happy and live long.
Are all deaths a form of suicide? So does that mean that all deaths are sort of a form of suicide?
That would be one way of stating it, since everything that you experience comes about because of the balance of your thought, and no one else can think your thoughts or offer your vibration, then everything that happens in your experience, including that which you term your physical death, is self-inflicted. Most do not decide to die. They just do not decide to continue to live.
Well, Abraham, how do you feel about those who do decide to die and then commit what we call suicide?
It makes no difference whether the thought you are thinking is one you have deliberately chosen to focus upon, or whether you're merely lazily observing something and therefore thinking the thought. You're still thinking the thought, you're still offering the vibration, and you're still reaping the manifestational result of the thought. So you are always creating your own reality, whether you are doing it purposefully or not. There are those who seek to control your behavior for many different reasons, who even wish to control your behavior regarding your own personal experience. But their frustration level is great because they have no way of controlling others, and every attempt at that control is futile, wasted effort. And so many are uncomfortable with the idea of someone deliberately removing themselves from this physical experience by way of suicide. But we want you to understand that even if you do that, you do not cease to exist. And whether you depart this physical experience by way of deliberate suicide or by way of not deliberate release, the eternal being that you are continues to be and looks back on the physical experience you've just left behind only with love and appreciation for the experience. There are those who are filled with so much hatred as they live in their physical experience that the chronic pinching off from source and well-being is the reason for their death. There are those who simply no longer find interesting reasons to focus and remain, who turn their attention to the non-physical, and that is the reason for their death. And there are those who have not come to understand energy, or thought, or alignment, who desperately want to feel good and can find no way of stopping the chronic pain they have lived for so long, that they deliberately choose to reemerge back into non-physical. But in any case, you are eternal beings who, once refocused into the non-physical, become whole and renewed and completely aligned with who you really are.
So, doesn't that mean, then, that we each get to choose to some degree how long we're going to live in each life experience?
You come forth intending to live and joyfully expand. When you disregard your guidance system, continuing to find thoughts that disallow your connection to your source, you diminish your connection to your replenishing source energy stream, and without that support, you wither.
A process to manage one's body weight. Oh. Abraham, what process would you recommend to those wanting to control their body weight?
There are so many beliefs upon this subject. So many different methods have been tried, and most beings who are struggling with the control of body weight have tried many of those methods with little lasting success. And so their belief is that they cannot control their body weight, and so they do not. We would encourage a visualization of self as you're wanting to be, seeing yourself in that way, and thereby attracting it. The ideas and the confirmation from others and all of the circumstances and events that will bring it about easily and quickly for you will then come into your experience once you begin to see yourself that way. When you feel fat, you cannot attract slender. When you feel poor, you cannot attract prosperity. That which you are, the state of being that you feel, is the basis from which you attract. That's why the better it gets, and the worse it gets, the worse it gets. When you feel negative about something, don't try to hammer it out and solve it immediately, because your negative attention to it just makes it worse. Just distract yourself from the thought until you feel better, and then take another run at it from your more positive, fresh perspective.
So, is that why people will often go on a crash diet and lose massive pounds, and then they'll find themselves gaining it right back? Is it because the desire was strong, but they didn't have the belief and the picture of themselves as this thin person, so they just filled the fat picture back in again?
They want the food. They believe the food will make them fat. And so as they're giving thought to that which they do not want, in belief, they create that which they do not want. But again, that's going about it the hard way. For the most part, the reason why they lose the weight and then gain it back quickly is that they've never really gained an image of themselves as they want to be. They keep feeling fat. They continue to think of themselves as that, and that's the image that they hold. Your body responds to the image of self always. That's why if you see yourself as healthy, you will be. If you see yourself as slender, or whatever it is that you want in terms of muscle or shape or weight, that is what you will be.
Regarding food, can I follow my bliss?
Some have argued that if they do take our advice and follow their bliss, always looking for things that feel good, that they would happily eat things that are detrimental to their health or their body weight. People do often choose food to try to fill the void when they're not feeling good. However, if you've been tending to your vibrational balance for a while, and you've learned the power of positively directing your thoughts toward an image of your body as you want it to be, then if you believe that eating a particular food is contrary to accomplishing that desire, negative emotion would come forth as guidance. It's never a good idea to pursue any action that brings forth negative emotion, because the negative emotion means there's an energy imbalance, and any action that you participate in during negative emotion will always produce negative results. Negative emotion does not occur within a person because a particular food is contrary to well-being, but because of current contradictory thoughts. Two people could eat identical diets and follow similar exercise programs and get opposite results, which means there is much more to the equation than the consumption of food and the burning of calories. Your results are always and only about your alignment of energy caused by the thoughts you think. A good rule of thumb is, get happy, then eat, but do not try to eat your way to happiness. As you come to make your emotional balance your top priority, your relationship with food will change and your impulse toward food will change. But even more important, your response to food will change. Altering behavior about food without tending to your vibration nets minimal results, while altering thought will yield great returns without the necessity of altering the behavior. And so let's say that you've decided that you want to be very slender, but you currently do not see yourself as you want to be. And your belief is, if I eat this food, I will be fat. As you have a desire to be slender, but a belief that eating this food will make you fat, you would feel negative emotion if you begin to eat the food. You might call it guilt or disappointment or anger, but whatever it is, eating the food feels bad because given the set of beliefs that you hold and given the desire that you hold, this action is not in harmony. And so, if you're following your bliss, you would find yourself feeling good about eating the things that do harmonize with your beliefs and bad about eating the things that do not. Once a desire has been established within you, it is not possible to offer behavior that you believe contradicts it without feeling negative emotion.
What are my beliefs about food?
The beliefs that you hold regarding food are boldly reflected in the experiences that you're living. For example, if you believe that you can eat most anything and not gain weight, that's your experience. If you believe that you gain weight easily, then you do. If you believe that certain foods give you an energy boost, they do. If you believe that certain foods deflate your energy, they do. If you want to be slender, but you believe that a particular diet is not conducive to being slender, and you take the action of eating that diet, you will gain weight. People often initially balk at our seemingly simplistic analysis of your beliefs about food and how they affect your physical reality, because they believe that their beliefs have come about by observing experience, and it's hard for them to argue with the factual evidence that the living of their own life and the observation of other lives has provided them. However, observation of results gives you scanty and inadequate information, because unless you factor in desire and expectation, then calculating the action of what has or has not been eaten is irrelevant. You simply can't leave out the most important ingredient in the recipe of creation and understand the outcome. People respond differently to the food because the food is not the constant, the thought is. It's the way you're thinking about the food that's making the difference.
Opinions of others about my body are insignificant. Abraham, here's a question that someone brought to us. He said, a significant other pointed out to me that I have a little roll along my belt line and that it would be good if I worked hard to get rid of it and I could exercise more or eat less or order salads. And because she's a significant other, I took what she had to say to heart, but my roll just got bigger. Abraham, what would you say to this person in answer to that comment?
Would tell him that whenever you're using the word other, use the word insignificant regarding them. Of course, we understand that people in your life are significant, but you must not let their opinions of you be more important than your own. And anytime anyone influences you to focus upon something that makes you feel bad, you've received negative influence. We want you to practice your own thoughts so steadily that opinions of others do become irrelevant to you. The only freedom that you will ever experience comes when you achieve an absence of resistance, which means you will have figured out how to align your chronic thoughts with the thoughts of your inner being. We've never seen anyone achieve that alignment or the feeling of freedom when they're factoring the desires and beliefs of others into the equation. There are just too many moving parts, and it cannot be sorted out. And so, if someone says to you, "I see something about you that I don't like," we would say, "Look someplace else. What do you think of my nose? Cute little thing, isn't it? What about this ear over here?" In other words, we would encourage the other to look for positive aspects, and we would be playful and not allow our feelings to be hurt. In fact, we would practice thoughts about our life until we reach the point that our feelings are unhurtable.
An example of my old story about my body.
Here's an example of your old story about your body. "I'm not happy about the way my body looks. I have been trim and fit at times in my life, but it's never been easy, and those periods never lasted very long. Seems to me that I always had to work irrationally hard to get even close to the way I wanted to look, and then I couldn't manage to stay there. I'm tired of depriving myself of good things to eat, only to end up not looking good anyway. This is hard. I just don't have the kind of metabolism that allows me to eat much of anything that tastes good. It's really not fair, but I don't like being fat either."
An example of my new story about my body.
Here's an example of a new story about your body. "My body is a reflection mostly of the thoughts I think. I'm happy to understand the power of directing my thoughts, and I'm looking forward to seeing physical changes in my body which reflect my changes in thinking. I feel good as I think about my improved size and shape, and I'm confident that those changes are in progress. And in the meantime, I'm generally feeling so good that I'm not unhappy with where I currently am. It's fun to think on purpose, and even more fun to see the results of those deliberately chosen thoughts. My body is very responsive to my thoughts. I like knowing that." Remember, there's no right or wrong way to tell your improved story. It can be about your past or your present or your future experiences. The only thing that's important is that you be conscious of your intent to tell a better-feeling, improved version of your story. Telling many good-feeling short stories through your day will change your point of attraction. Remember, the story you tell is the basis of your life. So tell it the way you want it to be.